Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello, and welcome to Indie Streak. I am Rachel Galvin, and as you know, I interview film industry professionals on this show. Well, today I'm interviewing composer Anthony Espina, who is going to tell us all about some of the projects that he has worked on through the years and what it takes to put music into film, which is something that's very important for any film out there, whether it's a short film or a feature film. The music often is a character unto itself. When I interviewed Amy Glazer, she talked about how the music was very important in her film. If you haven't listened to any of my old shows, you can go down and scroll through the archives and listen in and listen to the different people that I've interviewed on this show. But we're going to be talking to Anthony in a few minutes, and he's really grown in the last few years. He's done quite a few projects since I first met him, not that long ago, but not a few years ago we met, and he worked on a film that I was in called Lucky Streak and the Crime Fighters, and he did some beautiful music for that, and he's really grown as a composer since then. And he'll be able to tell us all about that. But he also has a radio show as well, so he'll be able to fill us in on all of that. While we're waiting for Anthony to give us a call, I'm going to tell you about some other things that are coming up. The Palm Beach International Film Festival is coming up very soon, and I'm going to be talking about that on my website, which is Independent Streak, www.independentstreak.ning.com. And if you go on there, you can see all about the Palm Beach International Film Festival, the events that are coming up, so on and so forth. And I'm actually going to be interviewing a couple of the filmmakers next week on this show. As you know, the show is every Sunday at 1 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, and I will be interviewing Alex Hyde-White, who did 3 days of Hamlet. So you want to tune in for that. And I'm going to have another special guest right after that show at 1:30. So you want to keep it tuned to Indie Streak, because I will be having a couple great guests next week. But right now we have Anthony on the line, so let's talk to Anthony right now. Okay, Anthony, are you there?
I'm here, Rachel. How are you doing?
Hey, good. How are you?
Doing good. Thank you for having me on today.
You're welcome. Okay, well, we're going to dive right in.
Okay, sounds good.
I know that you started composing at a young age, and I wanted to know why. Like, how did you get into music? Were your parents musical, or how did you get this passion at such a young age?
It's definitely one of those circumstances that it was just a calling. You know, I was fascinated by music at a very young age. I grew up listening to bands like U2, and they just really inspired me musically. But I always enjoyed film music, and I knew that I wanted to do something musically. I didn't really have, you know, a passion for, as far as an instrument or anything like that, to pick up anything like that. But I was very sports driven. So I was always into sports in school. I was into baseball. I played baseball, football, basketball, played it all. And I usually thought that would be something that I would do later on in my life. That was like my number one passion. I picked up the piano like I was when I was around 12 years old, and I started teaching myself how to play the piano just as a second hobby, because I was so musically driven, and because I started, you know, to like film music. The first films that really motivated me to even think about film scoring was The Last of the Mohicans, and that score. And I just started playing around with the piano, coming up with different songs, and that all began like around, you know, the age of 12. I started, you know, taking piano lessons here and there, nothing too serious. Like I said, I'm very more self-taught than anything. And then it got more serious by around 15, 16 years old when I was in high school. I had just gotten picked up by the varsity team in high school. I was the number one pick in my freshman year of high school for baseball. Everything was going good. I had played my first full year, my freshman year in high school, and I was my batting average was all the way up there. Everything was moving perfectly. I was even playing the piano for the chorus there at the Lake Worth High School. My sophomore year of high school, that's when everything changed. I was diagnosed with bladder cancer.
Oh, wow.
And then that is when the whole journey began, because then that there was a 2-year ordeal of, you know, treatments and chemo and the whole deal. So that is when, you know, Plan B came around, which was music. So
wow.
It wasn't really, I mean, my mom played piano when she was little, and she always had the piano around, and she didn't really play a lot, but when she did, she would play, like, you know, the Romeo and Juliet love theme and Nadia's theme. So I grew up listening to those pieces on the piano. So I just started, you know, really getting serious when that all went down, because, you know, I missed a lot of school. I couldn't play sports. Everything was very, you know, doctor and hospital driven. So the only thing I could really relate to and release was music.
Yeah.
So then that's when I just started, you know, creating and you know, really finding my true voice as a musician and a composer and you know, just playing piano and creating music. And then I said, you know what, this is what I'm meant to do. You know, I didn't know how, you know, where this cancer would have taken me, or whether I, you know, whether I even thought I had a chance. You know, the doctors were very optimistic, and thank God it wasn't, it hadn't spread or anything, but it was bladder cancer. They did surgery, and a year later, after taking chemo for about 2 years, I was cancer-free.
Wow.
And then I told myself, you know what, music is, I already had hadn't played ball for 2 years, so that was kind of, I couldn't really fall back into that, because you have to play baseball throughout your high school, you know, time there, so that way colleges can see you and scouts can see you, so that way you get picked up by a university or by a college, you know. But, you know, since I hadn't played for 2 years, I did music for 2 years, so I just said, you know what, let's just, you know, follow the music path. So, and here
wow.
I am.
Wow, I don't even know that.
It's been a long journey.
Wow, that's beautiful.
Yeah, so that's the whole start of it. It's a long story, and it gets even more complicated
wow.
than that, but that's the main beginning, chapter one.
Wow. You have a lot ahead of you already, I can tell.
Yeah.
So how did you teach yourself, like you say, you're self-taught. So how does one teach oneself how to be a composer? How does that work?
Oh, wow, man. It's in regards to anything. If you really enjoy it and it's a passion, you just have to, you know, find the knowledge. The knowledge is out there. You know, you just pick up a book. You know, you listen to interviews for others who have been successful in your field. And you just, you find your own voice in that field. You know, you don't try to be like everybody else. You try to find your own voice in that field. And who's better than to teach you than yourself? You know, because it's your voice. So in regards to anything, not just music or composing, it's always good to just, you know, really find out who you are and teach yourself about you. And that's how I looked at it. I just listened to what, you know, to who I was as a composer and what kind of music that I like, what kind of music that I want to create. And, you know, you can study music theory and you can study composition, but at the end of the day, the best advice I was ever given was by James Newton Howard, to where at the end of the day, none of those rules apply. Because when you're in when you're in front of that piano, it's all about your voice and how you connect to the universe and how what you hear as a composer and what you can create. You know, so that's you know, that's the best advice I had ever gotten. And it's just, you know, right.
You did have some professional training, and I know you went to school and everything. Tell us a little
bit
about that.
I got a great opportunity to go to Seattle, Washington, and study under Hami Mann, their Pacific Northwest Film Scoring Program, for a little while, and I really learned a lot as far as the art of film scoring. Because again, you have to, if you can get the training, do it. You know, I've never really been school driven, but because again, I'm all focused on, you know, teaching myself. But if the training is there and it's easy and you don't have to force it on, you know, as far as looking at it and it being hectic, go for it. You know, to fly, take the opportunity, go to school. That's the most important thing. But I was very fortunate enough to study under him for a while, so that way I understood. Because, you know, I always looked at film scoring from my point of view. So to really see a professional do it, I mean, Hami Mann, he wrote, you know, for Mel Brooks, Robin Hood, Men in Tights, Dracula, Dead and Loving It, Year of the Comet. You know, he has a fantastic film scoring repertoire. So I, you know, to really see it done and to learn from one of the people, one of the biggest composers in the industry, was just a very big honor. And as far as composition's concerned, I studied under Donald Waxman. He's a local composer who's been all over the world. He's conducted for Korean symphony orchestras. He's been all over. He used to be a part of the Peabody Conservatory. He worked at Galaxy Publishing in New York. So I studied under him for a while as far as the whole compositional training and theory is concerned. Because, again, if you're given the opportunity to learn other than these masters and to really learn and to learn your craft is the most important thing. But at the end of the day, it's all about you're finding your voice and where you can take it. So that's most of the training that I've had.
Okay. What was your very first project as a composer?
Oh, my very first project was Guardian of Eden. And it couldn't have been... Actually, my first couple projects were basically just filmmakers in the area, local filmmakers. Most of the projects I've done are local filmmakers. But there's nothing greater than that first project because you think you know it all until you're in the project and you're dealing with the people and you're learning how it is to the business side of things. There's nothing, and you know, it can be very fearful. My first project, I remember, I was looking at it like if it was a major motion picture, and it was a very independent film. I mean, very, very low budget, if a budget at all. And I looked at it as a major motion picture because, you know, you throw yourself into these situations because you want to learn, you know. And at the end of the day, you don't realize how important it is because you're dealing with other people. You're dealing with other people's egos. You're dealing with, you know, the director and what they want musically and what you can give musically. And, you know, you're trying to – everybody's working as a team to make this project to take it to the next step. You know, so it was called Guardian of Eden. The director was Shane Layton. She had wrote the film. And it was just something, it was a great experience. And that led to, you know, other opportunities.
You did Lucky Streak and the Crime Fighters.
I did Lucky Streak and the Crime Fighters, which I met director Kurt Durner from the Guardian of Eden, who he was also the DP and director of Guardian of Eden, which he later did Lucky Streak and the Crime Fighters. And I learned a lot from Kurt as far as the whole promotional side of getting a film out there, you know, going to Lucky, what's that thing we go to every year, SuperCon.
SuperCon.
You know, going to SuperCon every year, which I love because it's fantastic. You meet people, the whole art about never giving up on your art and your, you know, your baby that you've worked so hard on to continue to promote it, to continue to get it out there. And that's one thing, that's one great example that I learned from Kurt is that no matter how many times you're rejected and no matter how many times you can always continue to promote it, get it out there, and eventually, if it doesn't get you what you originally wanted, let it at least get you to the next step.
You know?
So, again, it's all about what you learn from these people, and I've been very fortunate enough to learn a lot from, you know, the local filmmakers. And then from there, Kurt and Shane went to the next level because that's what these projects do. They take you to the next level, and I got the major opportunity to work on, you know, probably one of the biggest films I've worked on, The Incubus, which was in 17 theaters here in South Florida. Just got DVD distribution not too long ago, and it's really opened up the doors, not only for me. Yeah, on Blockbuster, it's at Blockbuster, Netflix, I mean, the works on demand. And it's just been great because not only me, but, you know, the people that were in the cast, the crew, everybody's just been thrilled about the project because it's taken them so far. It's opened so many new doors and opportunities. And I can speak for, you know, Kurt, because I know Kurt loves to have his name on that project. And Shane, she's been flying to California and getting opportunities. So we really got to thank the executive producer and director, Marcy Gorman, who was the ex-owner of Weight Watchers, who began that whole journey and who gave all the funding and the budget. It's great to work on a film that has a budget, you know? To be able
to.
That's
always nice.
Exactly, right? That's what every local filmmaker wants. And that was just...
Yeah.
That was probably the most biggest project as far as learning is concerned, too, because now you're working as far as contracts, as far as, you know, the business side of things, because people don't realize, the creative process is probably the most important, but it's not the only one. You got to worry about the business standards because everybody wants to make a living at this. Every filmmaker wants to make a living doing what they love. So that's an important piece of the puzzle when it comes to your career. And that was my major learning experience dealing with that. And Marcy's such a professional. It doesn't get any more professional as a businesswoman when it comes to Marcy Gorman. And she's really taken me under her wing to teach me and to – and one of the most recent projects I just worked on wasn't even a film project. It was a theater project called Midsummer, where they collaborated the music of the Moody Blues with the play Midsummer Night's Dream.
Oh, wow.
And Marcy hired me as the orchestrator, and I had to orchestrate the music of the Moody Blues into a more orchestral-type feel, which they already are, kind of, but, you know, we didn't have a 60, 70-piece orchestra. You know, we were dealing with Dreyfus School of the Arts, which they're fantastic. Mm-hmm. They have a fantastic school orchestra there. So it was a different side of composing. You weren't sitting in front of a screen. You were actually sitting in front of the orchestra and writing and orchestrating for them. So that, again, I have to thank Marcy Gorman again for giving me that opportunity of, you know, learning and being actually getting me in front of an orchestra.
Yeah. How do you work with filmmakers or you know, a producer if they're, you know, trying to come up with a vision? Do you look at the movie like, do you do post? Do you do pre? Have you done both? Mm. What's the difference?
Oh, there's so many different ways that, you know, and so many different types of ways, like, you know, that directors like or composers prefer. I know there's one way that, like, for example, M. Night Shyamalan and James Newton Howard, they like to look at storyboards, you know.
Okay.
They look at the storyboard of a film, and then they'll go from there. And I know James Newton Howard has done most of his demos just based out of storyboards. He won't even read a script. He won't even see, you know, a cue of a film or a scene. He'll just come up with his demo based on the storyboards, and he's usually dead on. The ways I've done it is I usually read the script. I like to dive because that's as close as to the film as you're going to get if they don't have storyboards. You know, I like to dive into the project, get a feel for it, get a feel of what I would write musically for the score, and then what I do is I'd get, you know, some examples of what the director or the producer is looking for musically, so that way I can take their point of view and mine and kind of combine it. You know, that way we're all happy as far as the musical score is concerned. And then what you would do is you would create a demo, you know, give them that demo, show them that, you know, where you take the film. And you're either dead on or you're, you know, they'll just tell you, okay, we like it, we'll let you know. If they tell you, we'll let you know, you're usually not getting the project, you know. But thankfully, I've never been given one of those. You know, I'm usually dead on when I do my demo. That's exactly what they're looking for.
Okay.
And it's just important to just, you know, kind of get an idea. Dive yourself into the project. Ask for as much notes as possible as far as what they're looking for. Read the script. You know, even like, let's say you're working on a vampire film, which I know me and you have worked on with the Guardian of Eden and stuff like that.
I wasn't
what
on that
vampire
one.
Film? Oh, you weren't on that one. That's
I wasn't
right.
on
was,
that one.
Yeah,
no,
you were later
that was before
on.
Before my time. Yeah.
Before your time.
Yeah.
But, you know, for example, like a vampire one. You would obviously go and watch other vampire films, you know, The Interview with a Vampire and The Twilight, just to get an idea of what that music is concerned. Like, even if you were acting, you know, if you were going to be working on a vampire film, you would actually go and watch the acting of Tom Cruise or, you know, whoever was on a vampire. So you got to get an idea of what's already out there. So that's another way of doing it. You just get as much information as possible before you submit your demo, before you go to an audition, and that's usually how I do it.
How do you know when to put the music in? Is there sometimes when there's too much or not enough? Do you see films
well,
that
music,
have, like, not enough?
The music is usually, it's usually the last part of the puzzle when it comes to filmmaking. You know, everything's done, everything is cemented, you know, all the edits are in, all the sound editing is in, and now the music is, the composer sees the finished product, because you can't give the composer something and then, oh, well, we need to change this, because when he's writing music cues, if he writes a specific cue for a specific scene and then it needs to be chopped up again, that music cue no longer works there, because everything needs to be synced up. So it's usually the last part of the puzzle in the filmmaking process. Once that's done, you basically sit down You start coming up with ideas, start coming up with cues. You start, you know, a great way of writing, Danny Elfman, you know, one of the gods of film scoring, is he likes to take the longest scene or the toughest scene and work on that one first and work his way back. So that way he gets that scene out of the way. I usually don't do that. I like to go in order, you know, from beginning to end, just flow like that, so that way it's all one big, you know, motion and one big crescendo of music. And it just depends, you know, what the feel is. You'll do a cue, you send it to the director, he'll look at it, he'll see, oh, man, this is perfect. And then maybe he'll say, I want something a little more upbeat, or I want this to crescendo a little more, you know. So you just work as closely as possible with the producer and the director. That way, you know, you guys are on the same page. But that process usually takes, I mean, it depends on the size of the project. It usually, in the major film world, a score can take from 1 to 2 weeks, and it depends on, you know, the budget. It depends on the time they give you. But me, it all depends, you know. Like right now, I'm working on a film called Unforgotten. It's an action thriller, and we have a deadline because we want to submit it into the Toronto Film Festival in Canada. Mm-hmm. And I basically have this week, and that's it. You know, thank God I've already had my demo and my notes and the ideas that I want for the score, so that way I can dive right into it and, you know, and work as closely as with director, so that way we know we're on the same page.
Okay, well, you know, we're already almost running out of time, so I want to make sure you give your, give your website for everybody so that they can find out more about you and contact you, so go ahead and give that now.
It's www.anthonyespina.com. Espina's E-S-P-I-N-A. And there you can see the projects that I've worked on and hear some of my musical scores.
And then what's your radio show that you have?
Oh, I also have a film scoring radio show that I'm a part of with the WEI Network, which we're going to be opening up a studio in collaboration with them pretty soon. It's going to be the WE Studios, and I'm going to be working out of there as well under that radio station. That's the WEI Network. .com, and it's a film scoring show called The Scoring Stage. It premieres every Tuesday at 1 o'clock.
Okay.
Or at 12 o'clock. At 12 o'clock, actually. It's from 12 to 1. Yeah.
And they just look
and
up
play, you know,
WEI.
Film music. The WEINetwork.com. Without the in the beginning, just WEINetwork.com.
Okay. And then the project that you have coming up is called Unforgotten.
Unforgotten. It's an action thriller.
Okay, so that's what you're working on right now, so we can look
that's
forward to that.
That's the current one I'm working on. I actually have a couple in the works, but that's the only one I can really give. The other major one I'm working out of is based out of North Carolina. It's called Woods End, but that's still very early in pre-production right now. But, you know, just go to anthonyespina.com. You can keep posted. I'm constantly updating everybody, you know, my fans that listen to my music. And again, you have the Facebook link and the YouTube link there, so you guys, if you guys want to get in contact with me.
Okay, and the filmmaker can just contact you and kind of talk up their film and go
of
from
course,
there.
Of course, or anybody that's interested in being a film composer, anybody that's interested in music, anybody. I always get back to everybody that writes me.
Okay. Well, thanks for coming on the show, Anthony.
Oh, thank you. It was an honor, Rachel. You're a good friend of mine. I know that you've done a lot for a lot of filmmakers out there with your book and your website, and it's great to have you as a friend. Thank you so much for having me on.
Thanks, Anthony. I'll talk to you soon. Okay. Bye.
Okay. Bye.
Okay, well, that was very nice. Anthony is a great guy, in addition to being a very talented composer, I have to say. He is a great individual, so I highly recommend him for any project that you might be doing, because he is great to work with, laid back, easygoing, just warm-hearted, wonderful guy. So contact him. If you miss any part of this, you can go back, as you know, and listen to the show again. It will be archived, and you can listen to his website, his radio show, all of that information. And as I said, this show is every Sunday at 1 o'clock, so I will be having a ton of new people I'm going to be interviewing. As I mentioned at the beginning of the show, next week at 1 o'clock, I will be interviewing Alex Hyde-White, who is well-known as an actor, but he's making his directorial debut with his film 3 Days of Hamlet. And after that show at 1:30, I will be interviewing another filmmaker. Both of them are coming to the Palm Beach International Film Festival, which is coming up very soon in a couple weeks. To get more information on the film festival, I will be putting stuff up on my website, which once again is www.independentstreak.ning.com. That's independentstreak, S-T-R-E-A-K dot ning, N-I-N-G.com. Also, there is a big event coming up April 27th at Living Room Theaters in FAU campus in Boca Raton for a new movie that's coming out, a SAG project called Caught in the Middle, which is being filmed locally. It was written by kids, and it's got a very interesting niche. It's got an excellent cast, and I'm lucky enough to be a part of the project as well. But there's a big project, a fundraising event on the 27th, and they're looking for vendors. So if you're listening to the show right now, while it's live, and or even in the next couple weeks, you can go and find out more about the project. You could set up a booth. It's only $50 to set up a booth and sell whatever product you may have, whether you're a photographer or, I don't know, sell jewelry. I mean, anything that you want to get out there. There will be filmmakers there, talent agents, casting directors, actors, parents, kids, everything. So there will be a lot of good exposure for you if you want to be involved. Just Google Palm Beach filmmakers. Palm Beach filmmakers have a lot of things going on that you can find out about, a lot of different events coming up. They're on Facebook. They're all over the place. They have a lot of classes and workshops. They have a demo reel workshop coming up. They're always busy with something, so I always play them up because they're very active in the community. So Palm Beach County filmmakers, check that out. Talina Adamo is directing that project, and it should be a very interesting film to be a part of. And as I said, always, you can go back, you can listen to these shows. I also have an additional show, which is archived, called Basics of the Biz. If you are an actor out there thinking about being an actor, you can check out that show. That has a lot of my own personal commentary about what I've been through as an actor. It talks about headshots, resumes, marketing your look, networking, acting classes, unions, I mean, you name it, I talk about it. That is here on Indie Streak. That's here on Blog Talk Radio /Basics of the Biz. So you can go back and you can listen to any of those shows if you haven't already. And you can listen to any of the shows here on this site as well under Blog Talk Radio /Indie Streak and find all of the different shows where I've interviewed filmmakers, producers, writers, etc. If you're interested in being a part of this show and you are somehow involved in the film industry, please contact me. I'm going to give out my email right now to you, which I have never done before. But it's Raven Prods, RavenProds @yahoo.com. I also think I have a message email here on this site as well, which you can also email me that way. But let me know about yourself, and I have a long list of people coming up that are going to be interviewed, so there is a wait. But eventually I hope I can get you on the show. But I thank everybody for listening in today, and I will be back next week, Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, same bat channel, same bat time. So I thank you again, and do listen in next week, and I will talk to you then. Thanks, guys. Bye-bye.